Nightlife Science.
Yes, science news with Charlie Lineweaver from the ANU, who joins us regularly to talk matters scientific. Charlie, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening, Earthling Phil.
Well, a new detailed image of the largest and closest supermassive black hole can help explain how matter fuels its powerful jets. What's all this about?
Well, you know about black holes.
Yes, I do.
You may remember about a year ago, there was a giant, there's a very worldwide collaboration of radio telescope observers. Mm-hmm. And they combined their radio telescopes and took the first ever image of a black hole. And this black hole is called M87. It's at the center of the closest supercluster, Virgo. And it's very close. It's only 50 million light years away. Anyway,
it's 50 million light years. Well, it's nothing. It's just a hop, afternoon stroll. Right. Yes.
Nearest galaxy to ours is 2 million light years. And this is the nearest supermassive galaxy. Just to give you a perspective, our galaxy has a black hole in its center of 4 million. This one has a black hole of 6 billion. So more than 1,000 times more massive, this supermassive black hole. And that's why it's so photogenic. It's big enough and close enough so you can get good angular resolution on the sky with the largest telescope ever made by human beings. And it's the size of the Earth, because one side, there's a radio telescope on one side of the Earth, there's a radio telescope on the other side of the Earth, and then they have to integrate their images to make this giant, this beautiful high resolution image of this black hole. But the new detail is, that was last year, the new detail is that they analyzed the data, and they analyzed it being sensitive to polarization. So light doesn't just have luminosity, it also has what's called a polarization angle. That's why, polarized sunglasses, if you rotate them, you see different things, and sometimes it's brighter, and then sometimes it's less bright. And have you ever worn polarized sunglasses?
Yes, I have. They're very good fun, particularly if you want to look for fish.
I didn't know that. So you can see, that's right, because it stops the light from reflecting off the surface.
Yeah, and you can see beneath the water, and you can see fish. Aha.
I thought of that. That's an excellent. It's also when you're driving, there's less reflection off of the front of your car, right?
Yeah, they're good.
You are a fisherman. Anyway, so these radio measurements are sensitive to polarization angle, and that's how they made this beautiful new image. It's slightly higher resolution, but you can see the details of the magnetic field around the black hole. And you could say, well, so what about that? But you have to realize this black hole is sending out jets of material almost at the speed of light. And you say,
What sort of material? I thought nothing gets out of a black hole.
That's right. That's why it's amazing. But lots of stuff gets out of a black hole because of the power of the magnetic field collimating material. And it shoots it out in both directions, in opposite directions. And there's lots of material coming out. And the magnetic field is what's doing this. And how it's doing this is a bit of a mystery, but it has something to do with the magnetic field lines getting wound around and braided up. And then it squeezes the material, so it pushes it out. And more than that, I do not know. And if you want to know more, try Wikipediaing MHD, magnetohydrodynamics.
All right, enough about the black hole. Now, on to spacecraft news. Now, this is stuff we can all understand. NASA's Mars helicopter, Ingenuity, is ready to fly. The whole NASA rover is still going well, and the helicopter is about to take off, Charlie, or will soon?
What happened this week was they took the cup. This helicopter is kind of packaged at the bottom, underneath, where like a muffler of a car. If the Perseverance rover is like a car, it's where the muffler is. And so they had to. And when they landed, of course, the underside was getting blasted with all the stuff that was coming off of the surface. So it had to have a protecting cover. That protecting cover has been taken away. The helicopter is then folded down and then dropped onto the surface. underneath the Perseverance rover. And then the Perseverance rover has backed off. And as it backed off, it took pictures of this beautiful new helicopter on the surface of Mars. And it apparently it's going to sit there for the next week or so doing nothing. But after sometime after April 11th is when it's going to be charged enough and ready to go and fly to, for its first flight of a helicopter on another planet.
I wonder, we may well get, not live, but we may well get actual pictures of that, mightn't we?
Oh, I'm sure. No, that's the whole point of backing off. Backs off, and then it takes a picture of the whole thing.
So the time that it actually takes off for the first time, we'll actually get a view of it, if it works.
Yes, well, I think we'll get two views. One from the rover itself taking a picture of this helicopter going up, but there are also cameras on the helicopter, kind of like a drone, right?
Yeah.
And so we should get both of those sets of pictures, unless I'm mistaken. I don't think I'm mistaken, though. I think we'll have images from the rover images from the helicopter. I mean, that's the whole point of the helicopter, to get a bird's eye view of all the things around the rover and see where it should or should not go.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a picture of the rover here, actually, on the Martian surface. Wow. Wow. So amazing, isn't it? Amazing. Anyway, now speaking of other spacecraft, SpaceX, the private company run by Elon Musk, they're the ones that can. Well, they do. They do seem to be able to land rockets the right end up after they've been into space. They've had a few problems though. They've blown up a few, and they've blown up another one.
Yes, that's right. So these blow-ups are spectacular to watch. And another one last week. Now, I should tell you which one are being – it's not the Falcon 9. What is being blown up are prototypes for what they call the Starship. And the Starship is this giant – looks like a giant spray can bottle or something. And it's really funny looking, like something out of the 1950 science sci-fi. Epic. Anyway, it went up and it got up about 6 kilometers, and then boop, this everything went in, blew up spectacularly because of what they think was a methane plumbing problem, something to do with the overpressure of methane in one of the nozzles. And then they have wonderful pictures of all the debris that's all over the beaches at Boca Raton in southern Texas. So that's where, you know, it's a very isolated area, not that many people, but the whole place is filled with debris from this thing that blew up last week.
Yeah.
It underwent a RUD. It's called a rapid unscheduled disassembly.
A RUD. Anyway, well, good luck to them. I mean, they're doing things that many people thought could not be done. Now, more steps, albeit small, towards human immortality. Now, be careful what you wish for, I suppose, but how can parents with old cells produce embryos with young cells?
Yeah, you know, when you're a parent, you're 20 or 30 or 40 years old, so the cells in your body are that old.
Yeah.
They're not young, newborn cells. They're young. They're old cells. Hmm. And so the question is, well, wait a minute. How do these two parents come together and produce an egg, a fertilized egg that is young? Well, as it happens, what they've looked at, they have a new, what is called an epigenetic test for aging. And they find that, wait a minute, when the egg gets fertilized, it is like an old cell, but then it does what they call reverse aging. It gets younger and younger and younger as it divides and divides. And what they have found out is, what does that mean to get younger and younger? And what it means is that the DNA in the cells are being wound around something called histones. When they have, this gets a little bit difficult here, but they have methylation. And essentially, it's the way the DNA is wound around determines what parts of the DNA can get expressed into proteins and what can't. And it's that pattern of winding that enables it to get younger and younger. And then after, I think it's about a few weeks, it starts to get older, normal aging. So essentially, they're looking at the epigenetic, they're tracing the epigenetic progress of reverse aging. And if they can do that in an embryo, maybe they can do that in us.
Yes, okay. Now, meanwhile, scientists have grown mouse embryos in a mechanical womb.
Yeah, this is sounding more like Frankenstein every day.
Okay, I don't know. Who is doing these crazy experiments? Anyway, go on, Charlie.
So this Israeli scientist has been studying, you know, they've been studying mouse babies and foetus and embryos. Yep. And what they did with about 1,000 mice embryos is after the mice were, the eggs were fertilized, and they grew in their mother womb for about 5 days. Now, I should point out that the gestation period of a mouse is 20 days as opposed to human 9 months. So anyway, there's 20 days. They take the eggs out of the mother after 5 days, and they put it into this artificial womb, the artificial uterus, which essentially is hard to do because you have to provide just the right amount of this and just the right amount of oxygen and the nutrients, et cetera. But they managed to do this, and they kept them alive until day 11. I'm not sure what happened after day 11. Maybe they killed them or something, or maybe it was, I'm not sure. But anyway, with the new unpublished result is they took the eggs as soon as they were fertilized out of the fallopian tubes of the mother mice, and they put them in the artificial uterus, and they kept them alive for another 11 days, from 0 to 11 days. And so that's called uterine progress, I guess. It's kind of weird because we thought that it was so difficult, a chemical process, procedure for these uterus. What these uterus are doing was so complicated we could never simulate it, but apparently they
apparently we can. All right, now there has been some progress in minimal life. Artificial life made in the laboratory can grow and divide like natural bacteria.
Yeah, so art of this whole field is called synthetic life, and the idea is to say, well, what is life, and how can we make a minimal organism that has the minimal amount of genes and the minimal amount of metabolism? So we're trying to understand minimal life. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, about 4 years ago, Greg Ventner and his group they identified a bacterium that had the smallest DNA, smallest number of genes, and they sequenced it. And then they took the DNA out of this thing called a microplasm, and then they artificially constructed DNA out of chemicals in the lab, put that artificial DNA back in, and they called it a synthetic bacterium. But what they did before that was they said, wait a minute, maybe this thing doesn't need gene number one. And they took out gene number one. It's called the knockout experiment. And then they took out gene number two. Hey, it's still living. Took out gene number three. And so they systematically went through all of the genes in this thing, knocking them out. And they figured, hey, we don't need all those 2,000s of genes. All we need are 473. That's what happened 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened just last week is a group. But the problem with the synthetic life was when the bacteria divided, it didn't divide and make uniform spheres. Some of them were big, some of them were small, and it was kind of like mutated life that was kind of weird, and it didn't look like healthy life because there were so many different sizes. But what they did this past week is said, wait a minute, we're gonna restore the ability of this minimal life to make uniform spheres when it reproduces. And so they added back, they discovered 7 new genes that they added back, making a total of 480 genes, and now they have what they call a synthetic life form that can produce normally and make uniform spheres.
Okay.
Not impressed by that.
and just finally on the same kind of field, a microbe has somehow survived without the proteins for replicating its own DNA.
Yeah, so the idea here is, again, to understand life better.
Yeah.
So what they were able to find was a eukaryotic cell, and eukaryotic cell just means it has a nuclear membrane around its DNA. And what they found was that this thing did not have one of the most fundamental features of what we think all life should have, and that was a set of proteins to make, to reproduce, to duplicate DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what happens in your cells. When their cells divide, they need to duplicate the DNA, right? And there's a certain mechanism we know how to do that. But this particular cell did not have those proteins. But it has to divide, and so it's using some new way to do that. So it's as if they figured out a new way to duplicate DNA, but they haven't really looked any further than that other than to say it does not have the normal way of doing it. So it's like discovering a new way to duplicate DNA, and that's something trying to understanding life better because of this.
Fascinating stuff. All right, Charlie, always great to talk. Thank you. And let's hope the little helicopter on Mars works.
That's right. That's really dear to your heart, isn't it?
Yes,
I so too.
Thanks, Charlie.
Uh-huh.
Yes. No, well, I'm I know Charlie's looking forward to seeing it worked as well.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.